I was in Spokane.
Did you guys know we're passing that hot potato?
Yes. Oh, my God. I was in Spokane.
Hi. Max. Jim.
Hello.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you? Listen, could you set up a meeting with Congressman Stenholm, Charlie Stenholm, about and the group of Democrats that he represents on the, so that we can get together and talk to them about the whole economic program and all, and have a briefing on them.
Yes, sir, Mr. President. That group's very supportive of your spending plans. I'm sure they'll be very receptive to having a meeting with you.
Well, that's great. Then there's one other meeting I think should be set up, and that is when they come back, the senators, with regard to the grain embargo, those senators that are interested and have some input on that. We'd like to have their support in Congress, and I particularly want the Democrats to know that we want their input. We don't want to just deliver to them. We want them to have some input and their recommendations too.
That's good. That group of Midwestern Farm Belt senators is very anxious to meet to discuss the grain embargo decision. So we'll schedule that.
Right.
Yes, sir. Well, Jim Jones, a member of Stanley's group. Jim is in that group of Southern and Modern Democrats that support the spending cuts.
That'll have to be pretty early in the week.
Yes, sir.
Like Tuesday.
Well, they're coming back the 17th.
Tuesday,
so we'll try to schedule
them
just as early in the week as possible.
You may want to let the cabinet know today, too, that you're asking for this meeting to be set up with the senators on the grain board. That's a good idea. I think that was your plan.
I'll get questions at 11:30 in the briefing on that.
Well, if he wants to have this meeting with the senators before he does it, right. I think he'd plan to do that anyway.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yeah, I'll be telling them about this.
May have to expand that meeting a little. There's some House members that are interested in the grain embargo, too, so we may want some House members to take part in that.
All right.
That's all I have today, sir.
Lean for me today. Have you shown the President your new innovation there?
Oh, yeah, this is the green sheet, which updates the network news summary that you get in the morning and the overnight wires. And this will pick up everything that's happened from 6 a.m. on that we were able to put in. It's a supplement to your morning news summary.
Wow. And this isn't just a model. This is for reading?
This is for reading.
All right.
More than you know about the news.
Yes.
What time are you going here today?
Around 11:30, 11:45. After the cabinet meeting, and yet in enough time to bring Mort in and Karn and Larry and then talk to you.
Before the governor?
Before the governors. And then the governors will be made available, the ones who want to go down.
Okay.
Keith, the cabinet meeting will be the Inspector General's program. That's the main thing that'll come out of that. They'll be talking about the economic package, but there's not very much there.
Reorganization.
Reorganization. Some legislation. But on the economic package, there won't be anything. There won't be news. It'll just be a review of where we are and how we're going ahead this week to get the decisions.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, is it all right if I go get a drink of water? It isn't on the schedule. it down quick. Good morning. Good morning, all. Everyone looks very bright and happy. Since the agenda is mainly concerned with the economic program, though, try not to smile too much. I'll be glad finally when the 18th comes and we can get it officially out in front of people so they know. And I worry about people like that man that are probably living in fear that from things they've read that aren't true. I just asked Max this morning to set up such a meeting. Yeah. Well, listen, thank you. Okay, all right. Bye. Nancy Reynolds. Okay. All right. Nancy? How are you? Okay. Well, Nancy Reynolds, I wanted to call you, though, and again, now that the stars are out of our eyes a little bit, on my birthday party, and thank you, because I know that was your engineering that, there may have been hosts and hostesses named, but it was your engineering that put that all together. Huh? Why? Why would I need any reminder? Well, oh, I can't recall anything ever like it. Yeah. They sure were. Yeah. I've, been with those same people to a great many social gatherings. I've never seen them ever so obviously having fun as they were. Sure was for me. Well, very fine. Yes. All right. Thank you. Right. Bye. Thank you. John? Well, how are you this morning? Well, I just wanted to thank you, first of all, for all the support and help on our last go-around up there. But also, to tell you, we're coming at you with another another war. The economic program. Jim, how are you?
Good.
I see Bill.
Hi.
John, good. Nice to see you.
George.
Hello there.
Nice to see you. Alexander.
Lamar, hi. How are you?
Good to see you.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Hi.
Good
to see you. Nice to see you, Bob.
Yes, sir.
Hi. Hey. Where'd you get the red vest?
Mr. President, I'm going to be hard on Kansas.
Good to see you.
Dick Thornburg, Mr. President.
Good Dick, it's nice to have you here.
John Evans from Idaho, Mr. President.
Well, hello there.
West, Nevada.
Nice to see you. Hi, how are you? I was right into a close-up there, wasn't I?
I'm Jim Hunt from North Carolina.
Well, good to see you.
Brendan Byrne from New Jersey.
Well, nice to see you, and nice to have you here.
Mr. President.
I'm on the other side. All right. Gentlemen,
Mr. President, we've concluded about two-thirds of the agenda before we that we intended to conclude before you arrived. We would we could continue with that if you'd like.
Oh, fine. Should have coordinated that visit, that entrance better.
So you're right on time. We're back.
I had a further statement to make. Mr. President, what we were speaking of was the proposal in Medicaid in response to what we had just said about being involved on many of the regulations that you've spoken of, that if there were new regulations that we could administer programs at the state level, federal and state programs at the state level, then we could do a better job and more cost efficient. Point that I was making is under the capping process Mr. Stockman has of cutting $100 million this fiscal year, adding 5% for the next fiscal year 82, and then rate of inflation thereafter, it goes on to make the comment that the states have not been cost effective and not been able to run an efficient program. And the comment was really not for you, but I'll continue. But it was simply this, that we have been frustrated at every hand in trying to curb the great increase in the Medicaid costs, and that it's been stopped at the federal level. Now, if you sit down and talk about efficiency and fraud, then we get a lot of play on it. But the problem is, it's when we come up here in the past and say we have some mandatory programs, we have to have those families that can afford to supplement the charge made nursing homes. We have to have some flexibility. We've always been denied. And I was just making the observation that I talked with your secretary yesterday. We were greatly encouraged that, in the remarks that he made in working with us. But what we're saying, not only on the question of federalism agenda on the budget, but in the regulatory process, too, we would like to be very much involved with the legislature.
Well, us governors understand that. I understand it. When we dealt with it with our, when I was in California, I know exactly what you mean, and I think there are things. I believe the greatest problem with Medicaid is, and they haven't solved it yet, is overutilization. We found out that staying in a hospital five times as long on Medicaid as the private patient for the same ailments and the same post-operative care, simply because there was no economic pressure for them to go home. The rest of us in a hospital. But the second day, we begin saying to the doctor, "When can I?" And we're thinking of there. I know that when England, some years ago, in their socialized medicine program, when they put payment, that you make, it reduced the budget by about 20 to 25%. With the difference in utilization, even at that very minimal little bit that they had to contribute themselves.
You know, know, Mills Godwin put, I believe, on his 50-cent charge of copayment on drugs, just for the first 50 cents being paid by the recipient. That cut their drugs by one-third of utilization.
Mr. President, specifically, the law now says that no nursing home rates shall be altered or reduced due to a state's physical condition. That's how explicit it is. That's the thing that just absolutely has to get changed. And it's going to take very strong leadership because the nursing homes aren't going to want to change. The hospitals aren't going to want to change. The governors want to change. And if you take the lead and we join with you.
Well, now, I'm sure the Vice President told you that he's chairing our program on regulations. Yeah. And that means all regulations, to see how many we can hack off and throw away. You're absolutely right. I know from experience that our problems are stemmed from being bound in by federal regulations.
No. Flexibility gets to the whole concept of federalism, which, of course, is your...
Well, yes, let me say there, that's one, and there's one I'd like your help on. I have believed for a long time, till I become almost a Johnny One Note on it, that a great many of our problems are because from the federal level there has been a concerted attempt, whether they realized what they were doing or not, to change the basic form of our government, which is that we are a federation of sovereign states. And they've tried to make the states administrative districts of the federal government. And it isn't going to work. And this is why we would like, as the time goes on, we'd like to turn many programs totally back to you for administration and turn back the sources to pay for them. The taxing, we could use block grants to begin with, but I'd like to see it get to be taxing sources, because that is the greatest guarantee of freedom and efficient government that we have. Because you have, as governors and as state governments, you have built into that system a kind of control by the people, in that if a state's government should get too far out of line, the people can vote with their feet and cross the state line and live someplace else. And this is why I mean it's a great guarantee of freedom. If we ever come to the day that through federal regulation everything is the same nationwide, then there's no limit to what government can do, because like all the other countries in the world, the people are captives instead of being the managers of government. It's their government. And we all serve it at their pleasure. So we'll be doing things in the days ahead where we really want your help. This thing in the past of getting desperate because of the costs imposed on you by federal government and then saying, well, let the federal government take it over, that's the wrong direction. I grant you that you can't bear the cost, because the federal government has usurped the tax sources too. But if there's a move to turn both back to those functions that properly belong at your level and the resources to pay for them, I think we'd all be better off.
Yes, sir. Mr. President, you had two very good, strong lines in your inaugural address, saying what you just said. I want you to know that the governors as a body strongly applauded those. But I also want you to know that as we did so, a whole line of congressmen who were standing down on your level in front of our box turned around and said, over our dead body, so now you're going to need our help.
You're kidding. They actually did that? Maybe over their dead bodies isn't a bad idea.
We want to help you.
All right.
It does create a timing problem, I think, almost all the governors, if not all, really want to sign on for the macro chore that you have undertaken to cut the budget. And we think that we could help in the cutting of the
sure
budget
can.
If we can participate in the process, which enables us to say, yes, that cut can be made, and without necessarily causing unfair justice. But the timing is important, because the Congress at the same time that they act with budget cutting must give us the kind of
ability to enable us to administer the programs that are most needed in our state in the way that they have to be administered. Many of us are hoping that we're going to be able together to bring off this wonderful change in economic circumstances, but it's the budget cutting part of it is bought before the change in the administration and the block grant concept and the input from the states and the municipalities have to administer the programs. We could be in the worst of worlds. You know, we would have signed on, assuming that we would be given the flexibility to meet people and not have to explain to them why budget cuts without the flexibility. Timing and the coordination of these two quite different but related episodes is very important.
Well, that's a very good point and something for us to
I might say so. Phase out. You realize to get through the hill, you've got to phase out some of these things. The federal government can't afford to do anymore.
principles, and if those principles were kept in mind as they were going down their list of specific budget items, they could pick out for themselves which ones violated those principles and which ones did not. We considerably narrow the list of what we have done.
Ed, would you like to speak to that?
All right. These are the principles that I know are of common interest to the state and local governments. We, as you probably know, had the pleasure yesterday of meeting with a large group of counties and state legislators across the country. Some of the same points keep coming home. With respect to the tax piggyback and phase-out issue, especially that you not only have us in the Office of Management and Budget thinking about these things, but I know yesterday Drew Lewis, Secretary of Transportation, is very much interested and concerned about the phase-out problems he was talking about specifically in the state of Pennsylvania, where that right now they're into the funding for the next fiscal year for the transit operations and the local rail services there. So we are indeed well aware of what the problems are, and we're having to do some fund balancing acts to come up with a program that makes sense for the states to continue their programs in an orderly manner, as well as for us to come up with the budget recommendations that the President can sign off on and meet the objectives of the spending control program.
Mr. President, can I raise one off-budget item, if you will? I come to the state where we have a critical water shortage, which is developing into a state emergency, perhaps a national emergency. But I impose upon your good offices to engage with proper White House people to meet with those governors at some time soon who are affected by this drought emergency and explore the federal role.
Yes, we can do that. Yes. I'm hoping for spring rains.
I think we're going to run out of time before our lunch, and I would like to take this opportunity on behalf of all of the governors to express to you our appreciation for arranging this audience with you so early on in your administration. I'd start off by saying we all agree with you that the economy is in a mess and immediate steps have to be taken. I think that the roles of the federal, state, and local governments, their responsibilities, their relationships, even a bigger problem. And at our meeting in Denver in August, we adopted the federalism issue as being the number one priority for the governors. And I know as you campaign that you adopted the reform of the federal system as one of your top goals, so we have that much in common, but it is indeed going to be a very difficult task for all of us. I might say that in the sorting out process of those things that should be done at the local level, at the state level that you've suggested, or at the national level, that we get very little help in the Constitution in the sorting out process because the enumerated powers in the Constitution are totally inadequate. The general welfare clause is too broad, and so it's just come to the point now that with interpretations of the court, the Congress can meddle in any area in local state government they want and have. So as a result, we have had a great proliferation of this. But I think really and truthfully that our system of federalism, it's really no longer characterized by those things that are truly a state function, or a national function, or a local function. And it's, I think, a question of us to decide which can be done for the people the most efficiently and most economically, I might say that this proliferation of the categorical grants that you've alluded to so often and which we have, but where they have grown from 1977 to 1982, we're going to see another thing. You're going to see that we've had a 65% increase in the growth of these narrowly defined categorical grants, and we've had a reduction of 30% in those broad grants that you speak of. So everything's going in the wrong direction is what I'm trying to say. But we had back in 1979, we had 473 categorical grants. Of those 473, 10% of them funded 90% of accounted for 90% of the funds, which meant we had 424 with the remaining 10%, these small, narrowly defined programs that we must address. But I'm going to submit to you, Mr. President, that regardless of what you do or what we do, unless working together, we can penetrate the iron triangle over on the hill of the special interest group, the bureaucracy, and all that goes to make up this triangle that's so often referred to. And there is opposition that's not yet materialized. unless we can penetrate that on Capitol Hill, we'll continue to have this proliferation over there. So by working with you in a close partnership, which we want to do, which every governor president has expressed an interest in doing, that we are here to tell you today that we hope this is the beginning of that partnership. I'll say further that I've just gotten Dave Stockman's black book right here, and none of us have had an opportunity to read it. We've had no input into anything, but very truthfully, we didn't expect to, because you had to come in, you had to act very quickly. But under the agenda now, as we said, that on the 18th, you'll be announcing more specifically your program. On the 23rd, you generously said that you would meet with just the governors, and we might sit down and go in some more detail as we go about exploring these areas and this relationship that we can address. So I just want to say that we're looking forward to working with you, but it's going to have to be kind of a two-way street. We will have to be plugged in this process. I think we can materially contribute. I've been cautioned since I made all these positive remarks. I think it's critical that we be positive as we walk out and face the press today. But I know down the road that when we start talking about defining the roles, is really like we think that the schools, education, roads, police and fire, that should be more state or local than federal. Oh, but if you're talking about should all Medicaid be down there, is that really us or you? We can get to where we will debate these issues, but working together, we're going to have some lumps down the road, but knowing this, we come to you today saying that every governor, without exception, without party alignment, wants to work with you on the federalism issue. We think it's the only way that our nation can be saved, and it's the only way we're going to straighten out the mess that we're in. We have to redefine the relationships of government. We want to work with you.
I'm delighted to hear that. And Jim, when you were talking there about, it is true. Some people sniped at me for using the word calamity. We do face a calamity, and anyone who can't see that, when you stop to think, I knew I had these lines in the air the other night, but when you stop to think that here's what really has been happening, the government's revenues have been going up, but government's been increasing faster, and so each year the deficit in that gap in there gets bigger. So for this year that we're in now, suddenly government is faced with about $100 billion tax increase. It sharply went up. Over the windfall, the bracket creep that is so severe now, we've had 2 years back-to-back of double-digit inflation. But this would be fine, not fine really, but I mean it at least would have some advantage if this government spending line continued, but this line was going to come up and intersect it to be paying for the full cost of government. But it isn't. You suddenly look and this line turned up, and again turned up even more steeply, so that even after that gigantic tax increase, we're faced in the 82 budget with the biggest deficit of all time, up in the $100 billion field. Well, now, you can look at all the governments of history, and you say, that cannot go on. So we've heard years and years of gradualism and of promises, well, we've got to get a handle on spending. Then we can reduce the burden on the people and so forth. The truth is, each year, for these several years, the percentage of the gross national product that government is taking is increasing. And you look back to what that percentage was for many years, it stayed kind of even. And we didn't have this runaway inflation. We didn't have these problems. And I just believe that what we're aiming at is to get back to a point in which we're not saying that government's going to spend less next year than it did the year before. We know that's impossible. And that we have growth and it's going to go on. But if we can lower the rate of increase in government spending and then stimulate the economy, even though we're asking for tax cuts, you know and I know that tax cuts in the tax rates, which only actually are reducing part of that increase. We're not reducing them below what they have been. We're reducing the rate of increase. But if we reduce, with the stimulant of the economy, that tax line begins to approach now the government spending line. Up there ahead is daylight. And then I think there will be further tax reductions we can make. Well, when the federal government reduces its share of the tax burden, it again eases one of your problems. Because one of your problems is today the federal government hasn't left many tax sources for any of you to turn to. They've all been usurped by the federal government. And there can come a day, as I say, when the actual turning back of tax sources. I still have one idea that I know we can't suggest now till we get out of the woods, but I want someone to tell me when we do get out of those woods, why instead of block grants, I want someone to tell me why it wouldn't work to have the federal government declare an X percentage of the federal income tax to be retained by the states where it is collected for the states to use as they see fit.
Mr. President, maybe we can follow up on that discussion at lunch. We're about 5 minutes late. Yeah. So.
Well, let's not be late for lunch.
Incidentally, I was getting better all the time.
I just want to say what Jim said here about whether the states or not formed the government, and there was other ones. There was a columnist here in Washington, and she took me on and said that this was another misstatement of fact by me. And a very eminent scholar followed up with a letter to the editor and said, no, it wasn't a mistake, and cited chapter and verse that it was the states that gave permission for the creation of the union and what the union would do. Well, we're going to get back there.
We've cut our percent of gross state product that state government's using by 0.5% in 3 years, and you can do it. Right. The federal government just really well.
Yeah.
All right. We appreciate it.